the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever the time zone, all 25 of them covered like a blanket. I, this program, Coast to Coast AM, I'm Art Bell. My honor to be with you through this weekend as we explore some fascinating avenues tonight. The Honorable Dr. June will be here. It is never boring. Maybe many things, but boring it never is when Major Ed Dames is on the radio. A remarkable man. He's the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. And I've got a full copy, I've said this so many times, of his military record. He did exactly what he says he did for the secret CIA-funded remote viewing program that went on for 20 years in this country. And if you listen tonight, you will see why they call him Dr. Doom. Let's look around the world very briefly. We'll have open lines this hour shortly. The commission investigating the September 11 attacks will recommend, get this folks, a new cabinet-level post to oversee the nation's 15 intelligence agencies and control their budgets. Say two people familiar with the panel's final report. Oh, man. The report to be released Thursday makes the case for a director of national intelligence by detailing intelligence failures by the CIA, FBI, and others that enabled the September 11 terrorist attacks to occur. They say the two would only speak on condition of anonymity, yeah, I bet, because the report has not been made public yet. This is going to be one big fight, and I mean really a big fight. Now, the reason I say that is because our nation's intelligence agencies are nothing if not competitive, jealous, and in constant combat with each other. So for one entity to oversee and control all of them, including their budgets, there's going to be a big fight. A suicide car bomber hit the Iraqi justice minister's convoy as he left home Saturday, killing five bodyguards but leaving Al-Hassan unharmed. Three people, including a police chief, died in the attacks throughout the country. So Iraq still is not a very safe place at all for anybody. Here in Nevada, fire managers began releasing engines and air power from a fire Saturday. It was a scary one. It destroyed at least 15 homes as crews secured containment lines near the homes and made some progress to keep flames out of the Lake Tahoe Basin area. It was close, though. It was very close. Images of an American hostage being decapitated have shown up on the internet tonight. It was a site that they chose, of course, known for carrying statements of Islamic militants. The gruesome videotape appeared 3 days after U.S. authorities announced the search for the body of Paul M. Johnson, Jr. had been called off. So they may have had a preview. A balloon ride turned into a very scary ordeal indeed for 20 people Saturday when the aircraft got stuck high above the city and then was tossed around by high wind like a piñata, it says here, for about an hour and a half before rescuers finally brought it down. That must have been pretty scary. You're hanging up there in a balloon tethered and a really big storm comes along and starts to push you all around. The Danbury Federal Correctional Institute is about 20 miles from Martha Stewart's home in Connecticut, and that's where she's a-going. But it will seem like a world away from her normal lifestyle if Stewart loses her appeals. She will, in all likelihood, end up in the low-security prison that is home to 13 other female inmates. Now, I'm certain, because George is on the ball, that there's no way you could not have heard the following during the week, but the headline from the New York Times is, collapse of the Earth's magnetic field accelerates. Yeah, that's right, collapse of the Earth's magnetic field accelerates. The collapse of the Earth's magnetic field. New York Times stuff, folks. which both guards the planet and guides many of its creatures, appears to have started in earnest about 150 years ago. The New York Times is planning to report on page one. That's front page news, Tuesday. Science reporter Bill Broad has filed a report, according to newsroom sources, which explains how the field's strength has waned 10% to perhaps 15% so far, and this deterioration has accelerated of late, increasing debate over whether it portends a reversal of the lines of magnetic force that normally envelop our Earth. Broad explains during a reversal, the main field weakens, almost vanishes, and then reappears with opposite polarity. Afterward, compass needles that normally point north will point south. And during the thousands of years of transition, much in the heavens and earth would go askew. Broad claims, quote, a reversal could knock out power grids, hurt astronauts and satellites, widen atmospheric ozone holes, send polar auroras flashing to the equator, confuse birds, fish, and migratory animals that rely on the steadiness of the magnetic field as a navigational aid. Now, that came sailing off the Drudge Report, but New York Times stuff, how about that? And then, you know, they didn't mention human beings in that list of mammals and birds and such that will all of a sudden have some difficulty and will not be able to function as normal. I'm sure that Homo sapiens probably will be affected in one way or the other. And in fact, as you look around you, can you really be sure that it has not yet begun? Now, there's some big news. The sun is having its way with us right now. It began several days ago. I don't know how many of you are up on all of this. I would imagine George certainly would have covered it during the week, but, we're being bombarded. There began a few days ago, sort of like warning shots across the bow, several Class M flares. Those would be medium-sized flares. They were then followed by about four or five, and we're in it right now, four or five really big X-class flares. Boom, 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 like a machine gun. We're way on the downside of the 11-year sun cycle, where some scientists say, in a sort of contrary manner, you are liable to get, according to the last couple of cycles, bigger sunspots. Well, we're sure getting them, baby. Just like a shotgun firing at the Earth, they keep coming. It's underway right now. And then this. Imagine you're in California. It's July, the middle of summer. The sun comes up early. Bright rays warm the ground. It's a great day to be outside. And then suddenly it begins to snow. Not just a little flurry, but a swirling blizzard that doesn't stop for 2 weeks. That's what the forecasters call unseasonable weather. It sounds incredible, but something like that just happened on our sun, and they refer to the last spate of sun flares, like the ones I just described we had. They were perhaps historical. One of them certainly was historical, being perhaps an X-28 to 48. They don't even know for sure now, but it was the monster of all times, in fact, so big that satellites had to recalibrate their instruments because it pegged them all out. Boom! Just like that. And I got a very, very interesting email from somebody right here in Pahrump, Nevada, another ham operator, who says, hey, Art, just for your info, we had an extreme X-ray event this morning, July 16, at about 6:55 a.m. Pacific time. My radiation monitor went nuts, allow me to explain. I've got a monitoring ready. I've been monitoring them since 1999, radiation levels in this area, meaning here in Pahrump, for my own peace of mind. Our normal background radiation is about 10 to 15 counts per minute, or about 001 millirems or rads per hour. My monitor's level of event measurement is about 3,000 counts per minute, or about 5 rems or rads an hour. The social flare event this morning, the solar flare event this morning, pegged my needle far beyond the 3,000 count per minute or 5 rads per hour scale. Now, I thought my meter had broken. I have two meters, both calibrated by labs. One measures alpha, beta, and gamma particles. The other, alpha, beta, and gamma particles, as well as gamma rays and X-rays. And I'm telling you, this event was by far the largest I've seen in 5 years of monitoring. Not to be an alarmist, but there is something I think we're not being told. 4 rads an hour is deemed fairly unsafe for life. This event was far above that. And no one's saying a word. Perhaps you could look into it further. We are to expect another event tomorrow of the same or greater magnitude, and we certainly got it, by the way. Now, these stories may be related or not to what's going on our sun. Headline, Europe plagued by snow and heat waves. Romanian death toll climbs. A lot of times we don't look outside our own borders for news. We get so little news of Europe. Extreme temperatures, which have killed at least 22 people in Romania in the space of a week now, continued to plague Europe, with Greece sweltering to a heat wave and an open-air performance canceled in Italy. Now, you may have seen something of the story on Greece. And the reason they ran the story is because we're going to have the Olympics there, and there was a power failure in Greece, and they were sweltering, it said, at the time, in over 100-degree temperatures. 4 people, 2 of them teenage shepherds, were struck by lightning in Romania over the weekend when a heat wave that had killed at least 18 during the week gave way to hailstorms and gale-force winds. According to the Interior Ministry, fierce winds damaged 400 homes, mainly in the north, ripped up trees, cut power lines to 300 areas, while hailstorms destroyed 4,600 hectares, that's 11,300 acres of crops. Storms that had provoked floods and power cuts in Britain and Germany during the week turned to snow in the Bavarian mountains on Sunday. Germany's highest mountain was covered by 6 feet 7 inches of snow after 10 centimeters fell since Saturday, and the mercury dipped to an unseasonably cold -6 degrees Celsius. That's 21 degrees Fahrenheit. In Italy, the opening night of a new production there at an amphitheater was interrupted after just 7 minutes because of stormy weather, leaving 12,000 people very angry. So the weather in Europe is changing faster than anywhere else. But even here in the U.S., listen to this, Mark in border town, New Jersey. Art, here in New Jersey, our local TV station reported that we're stuck in a typical winter weather pattern. The jet stream is shooting straight down the east, just like it normally does in the winter. This weekend, we're scheduled for a northeastern storm in the area. It'll be rain, but still, it's a winter pattern, not summer. This is weird. Even the weather person on TV was simply lost for words. I think the day after tomorrow is today. And I'm sure you saw this, Stephen Hawking is now backtracking a little bit after nearly 30 years of arguing that a black hole, any black hole, destroys anything and everything that falls into it, including information. Stephen Hawking is now saying, I was wrong. And what he's suggesting now is that, in fact, a black hole would not destroy information. Information can apparently flow out of a black hole. Now, what this means to anything, I don't know. It's the kind of question that, of course, we will ask Dr. Michio Kaku when he returns. But information would not be destroyed, but rather available. So, again, what does that mean? I don't know. We'll have to ask. And then I've just got a cute little thing here. I've got more, but I'll put that aside. And this is, I don't know, somebody's idea of what would be a time machine ad. If there were time machines for sale, it might go like this. of course, the Acme Time Machine Company. You would call it Acme. Every cartoon in the world uses the Acme name, doesn't it? The Acme Time Machine Company. This is to introduce you to the Acme Time Machine. On March 3rd of 2020, we will start producing our machine, and we'll do so until June 23rd of 2041. We will sell these machines in units of two for safety reasons, in the rare case one should give trouble. These machines are fully guaranteed, and we will repair them free if they're shipped to us during the time we are in business. Of course, the fact that you travel with a spare, they're each only the size of a medium suitcase and weigh about 20 pounds each, means that many reasons for repair will be eliminated with common sense. For instance, if one is left where it is trampled by a dinosaur, one has only to use a spare to go back when it was left, you know, in the same spot, and move it before the dinosaur steps on it. If an improvement should be made in our machine while we are building them, we will simply go back before we ship them and incorporate the improvement before we ship them the first time. Now, in the unlikely event that you have problems with one of our time machines, simply ship it to us while we're in business, and we'll repair it before we sent it to you in the first place. Thus, the problem will not have happened. This policy makes our machines virtually trouble-free. Our sales terms are simple. Just send us $146,386 to arrive at our location, and I'll take that out, during the time we're in business, and we will ship your machines to arrive where and when you want them. However, due to the fact that these machines can be dangerous if improperly operated, we will only ship them to you after your 21st birthday and not before. As you can see, our terms allow you to have our machines shipped to you long before you pay for them. Also, another protection for you is that if you travel back in time and something happens so that you are not born, you will not have paid for and received our machines, and thus it will not have happened, and you will indeed be born. The Acme Time Machine Company will in no way be responsible for anything caused by time travel. However, if you cause a serious problem that does not stop our business, we will return your money and refuse to ship the machines in the first place. This will save both you and the company problems. So that's how there might be an advertisement for a time machine. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Art. It's Michael.
Hello, Michael.
I want to discuss about the reversal of the Earth's magnetic fields and what I believe that there is a connection with UFO sightings in some parts of the world and areas where there's magnetic oddity.
Okay.
You might have heard of South Atlantic Anomaly.
The South Atlantic anomaly. No, not specifically. What do you refer to?
There is a strong magnetic pull in an area about, how should I say, 500 miles southeast of Buenos Aires, Argentina, in the Atlantic Ocean.
All right. You mean a stronger than normal one, yes?
Yes, it's been detected by numerous scientific research on, you know, like we're developing other magnetic poles.
Yes.
In areas not known for them anyway.
Yes.
And don't forget, South America is a major UFO hotspot when it comes to sightings and areas with odd magnetic measurements are known to attract UFO sightings.
No, I don't know about that.
Sure. You heard of Landers, California?
Well.
And the Integratron?
Yes, but then there have been of course I have. But there have been UFO sightings virtually all over the world in areas where anomalies exist and where they
right.
don't. I'm not sure they're related.
Yeah, that's what George Van Tassel talked about when he built his Integratron back in the 1950s, that lander sits on a magnetic center.
Yep, I know. I've heard it all my life.
Like the North Magnetic Pole, and it said that within the next 100 years or so, it's going to change like 20 degrees, the North Magnetic Pole. I don't know where, like north or south or wherever like that.
Well, actually, sir, what they're saying is that the entire field is about to reverse. The whole magnetic field of the Earth is going to reverse. Now, they talk in terms of thousands of years, but they also say that, 10 to 15% of the reversal has already occurred. So, thousands of years and 10 or 15% which have already happened, it just doesn't add up to me. Boomba, indeed. Welcome to the program. This is Coast to Coast AM.
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories all, and to use them to help us to find.
Take a ride. To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. And, oh, I forgot to mention, on the website tonight, coasttocoastam.com, well, last week during one of my breaks, I snuck in with a camera and took a photograph of all four of our cats together. Now, I've cropped that so you can see them quite well. And there's a higher res picture of it up on the website right now. I've never obtained a shot of all four of our cats together. Not the feral one, not Comet. And so that you might know which of these furry things is which, actually, a friend of mine labeled them Abby, Comet, Shadow, and Yeti, and they're labeled. And so now you'll know exactly which is which, and I thank Ben Gardner, for labeling them. And it's entitled The Bell Board of Directors. And I'll tell you, that is not far from a true statement, because when you have cats in the house, well, from a cat's point of view, those that were worshipped by the Egyptians, they run you. You don't run them. It is their house, not yours. And so perhaps then aptly titled the Bell Board of Directors. And yes, I caught them by surprise. You can see it in their little shiny eyes. And so where shall we begin? How about here tonight? East of the Rockies, you are on air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Good. I'd like to respond to where the magnetic field is going.
To where the field is going. All right. Well, they say it's going to flip.
Flip. And that's what I've heard, too. But it depends on whose argument you listen to. There's an area of magnetite north of Labrador in Canada, which is where the compass needle points to, which is not true north. It's magnetic north. Now, if the area of magnetite loses its strength, which it has been known to have been doing over the years...
Well, now, wait. The actual area, magnetic north, as it were, is wandering and has been wandering for some time.
Oh, yes. It's been wandering because the magnetite is losing its strength and... the compass needle will point, it gets erratic.
Yeah, but I'm pointing out that this thing is migrating, so the magnetite being fixed couldn't be the source, not if the field is migrating away from it.
Okay, well, then that's a different argument. The field of field that the Earth generates, if you know anything about it, shaped, if you do a cross-section of the Earth, it's shaped like two circles coming out from the core of the Earth.
Oh.
And if the actual field is flipping, then that's a different story.
Well, that's what they're talking about, sir.
Yes, and that's what I had heard, too. And I was kind of wondering, I mean, from what you heard and what I heard, if it was the actual field or if it was the magnetite.
No, it's the field. Magnetite would be fixed. You know, it's the magnetite is a rock, so
yeah.
it's fixed.
So to speak, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the field. And many strange things will occur, and people, I believe, will begin to act very erratically. Now, they talk about birds and migratory patterns and other animals being confused. Do you honestly believe that we are not affected by, you know, the magnetic field? Of course we are. Of course we are. And if that were to flip, would people begin, and even as the, you know, thousands of years or less, process is underway, would people begin to react differently? Oh, yes, indeed. I believe so. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Art.
Sure.
You know, I want to know why it is that we're creating this new cabinet position to tell the, the president about intelligence matters when it seems that now we have a situation where the intelligence community has failed in the United States twice, if you believe that, that it truly was a failure, what happened on 9/11 and also what's happened in terms of the intelligence of weapons of mass destruction.
The British Prime Minister the other day actually apologized for the failures, fully admitting they were failures. He flat apologized, something you'll never see a U.S. president do. Last time I recall that occurring was President Reagan, I believe, and it was for the Iran-Contra thing.
You know, Art, I noticed that on talk radio we hear a lot about how, you know, pacifists are, you know, maybe ruining, you know, this nation. But, you know, I wonder when we take a look at, you know, where America came from, you know, when you take a look at, say, the Puritans, the you know, the Quakers, you know, the people that founded this country. I mean, these were the first people to set foot on the shores and make this nation. I mean, have we really gotten away from their values when we think about, you know, where we came from in terms of, you know, especially the Quakers? They were the most pacifist people, you know, that had ever been. It just seems like really like the soul of this nation is just kind of, you know, rotting out. I mean, we really don't have the kind of values of our forefathers, the people that founded this place.
Yeah, I imagine. Measured against the values of our forefathers, we have totally almost moved into the muck. Yes.
You know, I mean, to me, you know, the very fact that we're even considering this new cabinet position just begs all sorts of questions. I mean, why isn't anybody in jail
for the failures? I don't know. Maybe because they were failures and not, you know, somebody goes to jail when they commit a crime. May be there was not a crime committed here. It may just be flat incompetence. And if it's incompetence, well, I don't think you put people in jail for that, even though some feel you ought to.
What about Jim Mars? He's coming out with a new book saying this was inside job. I mean, are you going to have him on and talk to him about, you know, his point of view?
I'll talk to anybody about any point of view, including that one, which I absolutely disagree with. But I'd talk to anybody about anything if they present a compelling case.
You know, I mean, he did a lot of good research on the JFK assassination. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen you do a show on that, too, Art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, him and also John Judge. I mean, there's a lot of researchers that... that are looking into this 9/11 thing that don't seem to have gotten much coverage, even from...
You are obviously somebody who believes it was an inside job, yes?
Well, you know, I think that our history goes back to that. If you take a look at, like, 1898 and...
Is that a yes?
Yes, I do.
You do. Tell me exactly, just for the record, how you think this was orchestrated from the inside. I'm very interested.
Okay, I think that if you take a look at the history of Islamic terrorism from the start...
No, please. Let's not do history. Let's just do... It was an inside job. That's a huge thing.
Well, I think...
Hold it. Let me finish. That's a huge accusation you're making. So give me some huge stuff to go on here.
Well,
exactly how did this occur?
How did this occur?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that, you know, for me, the argument is sort of a modal argument. I think that if you take a look at the facts, that the best explanation of the facts is that there was a conspiracy on 9/11.
With U.S. officials, highly placed, secret or otherwise, orchestrating the death of thousands of Americans, the airplanes crashing into the buildings, and then the Pentagon with another attempt at maybe the White House, who knows. And I want to know how and who you think orchestrated this from inside.
Well, I think that elements within the petrochemical community. The
petrochemical. The oil company.
Yes, I do. I think that if you take a look at the history of, the Rockefeller family, the Mellon family, the Gettys, that these people have been running America behind the scenes for at least the past 150 years.
The motive for doing this?
Well, I think the motive for doing this, if interesting enough, you take a look at the oil companies, is just basically control of the oil. And, in fact, if you look at Thomas Gold's work, he's a Cornell professor.
How do you think the oil companies talked these men into destroying their own lives for oil?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of talking people into doing that.
Into doing it because they did it, sir. They took their own lives.
Well, you know, I think that if you take a look at the MK Ultra program, or especially right now,
so we did it by mind control.
Yeah, you know, you can definitely mind control people into doing that. I mean,
yes.
Look at the suicide bombers.
Uh-huh.
There are techniques.
And what as now again?
Kamikazes too.
This is a very strong accusation. So hit me with some proof.
Well, I think that if you take a look at the fact that NORAD responded to over 60, situations in 2000, and sent up planes to go intercept, derelict objects and planes that went off course. Why is it that on 9/11 that NORAD, which had done fine in the past in sending up interceptors to planes?
Well, because, sir, these weren't unidentified airplanes. They were not unidentified.
Well, no, they turned off their transponders, right?
That's right. But that doesn't mean they're unidentified. It's not like you're seeking a possible enemy. The controllers in this case, sir, knew that they were airliners. They knew, in fact, exactly what airliners they were. Now, they tried to notify the military. They made some attempts to notify the military, but basically the whole thing was a mess. They thought they had notified the right people. They may not have. There was a response, but it was too little, too late. I believe that there were a lot of inadequacies on that day, but I think it's one hell of a ride that man wants us to take to believe that we did it to ourselves. And I think that, you know, when asked for proof, going back to MK Ultra and mind control is not sufficiently close to proof for me to believe that we did this to ourselves. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. How
Hi.
Are you?
Fine.
Maybe you can hire that last caller to come spread some manure on my lawn for me. This bureaucracy that we're talking about, the intelligence agency, you know, we learned in Vietnam not to let politicians fight wars.
Right.
I think that's what's going to lead to. You're going to have oversight committees and this and that and the other, and that's just going to lead to what we had in Vietnam. You do not let politicians fight wars. You let the generals fight the wars.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. Imagining that the FBI, the CIA, all these other lettered agencies that are responsible for our security. There's so much interagency fighting and jealousy and
yeah.
competition, and this idea is going to hit them like like a hunk of lead over the head. I'm telling you, there's going to be a big fight.
That's true. I'd love to change the subject and share with you what my mother told me about a near-death experience she had whenever I was born.
Yes. You nearly killed her.
Apparently so.
Uh-huh.
She hemorrhaged for about 7 days after I was born, and she had to go back to the hospital. She lost a lot of blood, and she was clinically dead. No brain activity, no heart activity, no lung activity.
Yes, sir.
And what she said was she walked down a path. She was in a field, and she was walking down a path, and she saw this very beautiful, serene place that she wanted to go to. So she was drawn towards that place, and she was headed towards that place.
Yes.
And as she was going there, she came across a man on a rock, sitting on a rock. And this man, she described him as a dark complected man with dark hair, but the bluest eyes. She said the most piercing blue eyes you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And she said this man told her, "You can go no further." And that is when she woke up in the recovery room.
Oh, man, what a story. Well,
isn't that? I know. Hey, after she told me that, I mean, that's my mother. I believe her.
Yeah. Oh, I believe her, too. I absolutely believe her, too. The thing is, though, what are we to believe about these experiences? Are we to believe that, well, what do the scientists tell us? They tell us that in the death experience, our brain begins to release for its own protection and yours some sort of endorphins, some sort of natural dope, as it were, to shelter you against the dying experience. So the scientists would tell you that that chemical response, and other scientists will say, well, you know, the brain dying from the outside in is going to be centered on the light in the middle. And all the rest of that, that's one side. And then there is the kind of story this man just told about what happens to thousands and thousands and thousands of people who get right on death's door. They have a story to tell, and it's very similar. So which is it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. My gosh. What are you calling from?
I'm calling from a cell phone, but we're getting real bad reception tonight, it looks like.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's unairable, sir. We can't put that on the air. I'm sorry. Oh, what's happened to our telephone system? Yes, cell phones are wonderfully portable and they're convenient, but they bring us that kind of audio. It's really a step back. You know, mankind can take a step forward and then, in my opinion, a couple of steps to the rear. And there was a day when you would not have heard that kind of audio on a telephone, but that day has now passed. We've entered the new age of distortion and generally not being able to hear meteors crash, much less pins drop. West of the Rockies, good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Kurt from San Diego.
Yes.
What was I going to say?
I don't know. You went to the trouble to dial and get on a national radio
now
program.
Now I'm so nervous and I'm like shaking now, so I've got to take.
So take a deep breath and just relax and remember why you dialed those numbers.
You should do a show on the JFK assassination.
You think so?
Well, George did one back in November.
Yes, over the years I have done many, sir.
Never heard you do one.
Oh, many, many, sir, over the years.
Do you believe that it was the CIA?
Oh, hell, I don't know. Does anybody really know? I've heard it's like everything else. It could have been, I suppose, the CIA. It could have been an inside job. It could have been one of many things. It could have been one man all by himself, like the Warren Commission said. I generally, you know, Occam's razor, huh? I mean, what seems most likely, it's not always going to be the answer, but it's the most likely. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I can't. Oh, love your show. Love your show.
Well, thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
Was it not the church committee that drew put the walls between the FBI and the CIA?
Watergate.
Right. The committee under Frank Church.
Well, there has
the
always,
senator from Idaho.
The delineation has always been the CIA operates, you know, outside our borders, the FBI within our borders, right?
Well, and the second thing was it not President Carter who withdrew CIA funding of the Shah's regime in Iran that led to the whole birth of Muslim fundamentalism against the United States?
Oh, I don't know that that action began the whole fundamentalist movement against the U.S. That may have been well underway already. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
All right, sir. We don't have a lot of time, so let her rip.
Okay. What I wanted to say was about the correlation between the magnetic force of the Earth and human beings and the Chinese martial art of Ling Kong Jing, which is also known as empty force.
Yes, and what do you think one has to do with the other?
Well, what and how it affects us, we feel the magnetic force of the Earth.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm sure we do.
And how that, you know, can be used. I mean, how we can use that potentially as an energy field around us, which, you know, I mean, that's how it works.
Maybe someday, but right now I would say the magnetic field is much more in control of us than we are of it for energy purposes or anything else. I think that we are to some degree like the migratory birds, aren't we? I mean, think about it. How could we not be affected by something as elemental as the Earth's magnetic field, that which surrounds us all? Oh, no. We're like the birds. We may not fly north or south for the winter, but otherwise, we're like the birds. If you'll stay right there, in a moment, we've got Major Ed Daines. Dr. Doom.
Did you know you can find... At area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, some love him, some absolutely hate him, but nobody is never or ever not entertained by Major Ed Daines. and I use that in the loosest sense of the word, entertain. It is somehow entertaining to hear dire predictions, and he doesn't get the name, the nickname, Dr. Doom for nothing, believe me. And therefore, I issue my standard warning. Children, women, people faint of heart, not wanting to hear dire information. Well, you should turn the radio off and go away. Send the kids to bed so they won't have nightmares. Because coming up, Dr. Doom, actually, Major Ed Dames, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Major Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. He served as the Training and Operations Officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serves as Executive Director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. And get this, Ed is a technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero and, in fact, plays the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. We're going to ask him about his movie and a whole lot more tonight. But do be warned, what we're going to discuss is not for the faint of heart and probably not for children. That in mind, we'll be right back with it, minus those of you, well, the faint of heart. It's not very frequently that Harry, you know, Harry, who works at CIA, picks up the telephone, calls John over at the FBI and says, "Hey, John, man, you wouldn't believe what we just found out." Huh. It doesn't happen. There's this intense interagency rivalry that goes on, and Ed Dames worked with the spooks for a long time, right, Ed?
Correcto.
Yeah, correcto. You're going to just get real close to that phone for me. Our connection is not all it should be.
How's this, sir?
Much better. Okay, so you worked with the spooks for a long time, Ed. There is really... I mean, can you imagine one agency taking over, you know, all of them, including the budgets for each of them?
I can imagine it, but in practice, it would be hard to foresee.
It's going to be a big fight. So anyway, you did work with spooks for a very long time.
I worked at the Office of Secretary of Defense level. I had offices at CIA, Los Alamos National Lab, National Security Agency, and a few other places like Day of the Condor operations, hither and yon. Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll get back to all of that. Listen, you're doing a movie, Suspect Zero, and you're a technical consultant, which means that you showed them how it was supposed to be done, right?
I trained. I gave Sir Ben Kingsley a crash course for the movie art.
Really?
And that was great, great fun. And I coached Aaron Eckhart, and this will be his first starring role, his real first starring role. The Core was kind of a starring role, but this one puts him toe-to-toe with Sir Ben.
I like The Core, by the way. That was a good movie.
Yeah, and Carrie Ann Moss is in the movie as well, the star of the Matrix fame.
And then you're in it yourself.
I have a cameo role as an FBI remote viewing instructor, notably, this film, this feature film by Paramount,
yes,
will be the first time that the term remote viewing is used in a feature film.
So is that so?
It is. It is so indeed.
All right. Well, listen, when's it, Suspect Zero, when is it going to be out? Do you know?
It hits the theaters August 27th.
Ooh, you're getting close.
We are getting close. I wanted to give you a piece of trivia I think you'd appreciate. You know the term Matrix?
Yes.
For which the popular film series is titled?
Of course.
You know that that term was actually lifted by Hollywood line producers from our radio interviews years ago.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm.
They admitted that to you in the process, I presume, of the movie making.
It was hinted at, yeah. And a few of other books, major books, were actually line producers and authors actually took ideas from our...
Oh, there's been much literature, Ed, and many in other media have taken cues from this program and things that have been born here. Yes.
I think you'll enjoy this movie. It's hard not to, with a powerful an actor as Sir Ben,
Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner are the producers. Paramount is putting it out. It was a lot of fun, but I'm not going to give up my day job, from which I just returned last night.
Yes. Well, listen, everybody watch for his movie. I think it's pretty cool that you did that, Ed. How much time, by the way, did that consume?
For me, it actual filming, you know, they asked me to be an actor. I said, I'm not an actor, so they gave me 4 hours of acting lessons, and I did okay. So we're talking flying in New Mexico to film that, a couple of days there, a couple of days helping them coach the actors, because they were totally unfamiliar with this concept of remote viewings. I had to put people through crash courses. And then in the editing room at Paramount, cutting and pasting, helping cutting paste with Elias Marriage, the director. He directed Shadow of the Vampire.
Well, since you were the technical director, then you can comment on whether you think the film pulled it off realistically.
You know, Art, even though it's a highly dramatized version of my real life work,
yes,
I'm so close to the grindstone. My nose is so close, you know, it's ready to get ground off. So I don't think I can subjectively, give you a subjective answer.
I'll tell you something else. You're not going to be able to be objective when you actually, well, you may have seen the movie by now, but when you actually see the movie, you're not going to be able to be objective either. I just went through that with Day After Tomorrow.
I screened it at Paramount by myself. I sat in the screening room by myself, watched it, so I did see it. And again, I can't be really objective about it. You guys have to make that decision.
All right. A lot of people, so obviously, don't know what remote viewing is. And I know for 80% of the audience will say, this will be really old hat. But it's important at the beginning of a program like this to give the new listener who's saying, what the hell are they talking about? What is remote viewing?
Well, it's a technique that had its genesis in the deep, dark world of military intelligence. In layperson's term, you can think of remote viewing as the trained, and I emphasize that term, trained ability to use the unconscious mind to collect key data, key information about unseen or hidden people, places, things, or events, and then to deliver that information after decoding by the brain up to conscious awareness. So it employs a very, very structured, rigorous, standardized format as opposed to, let's say, a free-flowing process that psychics use.
And where actually, Ed, is this information coming from that's received?
I think the best way to conceptualize the where is to think for a moment, think of your brain as a radio receiver and mind as a single electromagnetic field. Apparently, everything exists in time-space as patterns of information in this so-called universal mind field.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of your brain as an oscillator, and it is, by the way, immersed in this field, the part of consciousness, the part that we refer to as the unconscious, can direct its attention towards, or let's say tune into, the signal pattern for any target, any person, place, thing, or event. So the remote viewing techniques allow the trained remote viewer to do an end run around creative imagination and to hold this target signal for as long as necessary and return to it as many times as necessary to solve for an unknown problem. And we record the information as sketches and narrative descriptions.
But this information, this great Google in the sky, is this what we call collective consciousness? Is this the total sum product of everything conscious everywhere throughout time? Is that what it is?
Apparently so. And that definition that you've just created is different than Carl Jung's idea, let's say, the famous psychologist Carl Jung, his idea of the collective unconscious. Because the collective unconscious implies in his mind the idea that this collective is only human beings, the collective unconscious of human beings. And we know in our work as remote viewers that mind extends far beyond and away from the idea of merely humans. We can, for instance, record and download information about things that no human being in any time has ever contacted. A stone on the planet Pluto or whatever. It's just as easy for us to describe as something, an event that happened in time, the Gettysburg Address.
All right, and the reason that the CIA funded all this for 20 years and fooled with it is, it appeared to work. And the CIA wanted other people's secrets. They wanted, I don't know, to know where gas canisters in Iraq were or rockets were being built or secret work was done, all that kind of stuff, right? That's why our government funded this.
That's one of the two reasons. The other reason was that, having been a targeting officer way up there at the celestial levels of intelligence, this was a tactic of desperation. There were some problems that were so tightly guarded in the erstwhile Soviet Union, and it's to some degree the People's Republic of China, are our two biggest potential threats in those days, a couple of decades ago, and still big potential threats, Russia and the PRC today. A tactic of desperation. Things were guarded so well that by hook or by crook, we could not, as intelligence officers, penetrate the programs. We couldn't find out if Russia really did indeed have a biochemical warfare program. What really was the capability of the SS-18 missile? We heard that it was really undefeatable. Was that true? And those kinds of things. So what this did was, after it was developed into a very useful intelligence tool, and that was my job, to take the discovery from the laboratory into the deep, dark world of intelligence, work the bugs out, and evolve it. Once I did that, what we could do was cross-queue, essentially provide leads to other intelligence collection systems and point them in the right direction to get the first piece of the puzzle.
You just said something that I'm forced to ask about, can't let it go by. You said tasks like, was the SS-18 undefeatable? Was it?
Yes.
It was undefeatable.
Correct.
So that no matter what we did, if we were faced with incoming SS-18s, there would be no way to stop them.
Correct.
That's fascinating. I take it that that was, I suppose, the predominant view that finally ended the Cold War?
No, or helped end the Cold War? We won the Cold War because we beat Russia economically. That's the reason we won. And that's the only reason I don't ever think that the erstwhile Soviet Union did not have what it takes.
Yeah, I don't. The Russians obviously were at our level, or in some areas, maybe even beyond it a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason why, I mean, not the reason why necessarily, but at least ponder this. Their philosophy was different, as well as the People's Republic of China today. And when you have a different philosophy, in the case of Russia, dialectic materialism, you have a different science.
Okay, move away from your phone just a little bit. You're popping your peas.
How's this?
Do you have another telephone there?
I have one close by. How's this?
Well, you know, it's kind of so-so. I mean, it's not the best phone.
Okay, after the break, we'll explain.
Yeah, okay, good. All right.
Okay, so you've got a science that's based upon a different type of philosophy, and therefore the technology is going to be different. And if one has the wherewithal, the resources, in terms of materiel and economics, then you're going to have things that are, well, the not invented here syndrome is going to apply, that we have not seen before. And that was one of the problems that I had at the National Security Council level, trying to convince that august group, for instance, that, let's say, hypothetically, perhaps the Soviets had a battlefield tactical laser. Well, their response was, well, we don't have one, and we can't make one, so how can they have it? And that was an uphill battle to gather, get all your ducks in order as an intelligence officer to demonstrate and provide the evidence to this body to show them that, yes, they do.
And you, like all other remote viewers I think I've talked to, maintain that the whole program was ended not because it was not effective, but rather because it was an embarrassment. Is that accurate?
It not necessarily so. It wasn't an embarrassment so much. That may have been a piece of it. It just was a loose cannon. It didn't have a theory that could be applied to it. It had replicability. In the West, we have to abide by the scientific method, which requires two things since the 1700s, 1600s. That's replicability, which we have in remote viewing. But we do not have a theory. We only have working hypotheses for how it works and models for how to teach other people to do it. but we don't really know how we're doing what we're doing with our brains.
Yes, but had you had a success rate that was amazing, nobody can understand how they would have ended the program.
We didn't have a success rate that was amazing. We do now. A Matrix Intelligence Agency, for which I am.
What was it then?
It was anywhere from 40 to 60%.
That's still very good. When you're talking about random events, describing a gas canister on the other side of the world, that's damn good.
But it scared people, Art. The unknown scares people. I told you this unbelievable story. The best war story I can think of is the head of the Presidential Foreign Intelligence Board, which most people don't know about. It's sort of a logic check against the CIA and DIA and all those other alphabet agencies that the president can turn to and say, what do you think?
Right.
Well, the PIFIAD, when briefed on the existence of this top secret technology at that time, went sheet white. His lips turn purple, and he points to the briefing book and says, man should not know this until he dies, unquote. At which
that sounds like a religious bias surfacing.
It's fear of the unknown.
Well, yes.
Okay, get this then. Let me further illustrate this point. Because we were a human use body, the remote viewing team was an experiment. Nobody knew what would happen to remote viewers if they applied themselves using these methods and techniques, regardless of the outcome militarily, in terms of a support tool. So we had to have various oversight committees, and we had to have a psychologist, a village shrink, oversee us to make sure we didn't go off the deep end, right?
Yes.
Well, this person was so afraid of the program, he never even came over to the unit where we were. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Afraid of, and this fear born of what, Ed?
Because this was outside the box, way outside the box. In fact,
were they afraid that their own minds were being read? I mean, fear this deep and primal has to come from something like that. I mean,
it was not on the part of the military. It was for Congress, though. The members of the Senate Intelligence Committee who were briefed, and I won't mention names, who were briefed on the unit, they were afraid that some of their secrets, and many of them had a lot to hide.
Now, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're dealing with men whose living and careers are secrets. So, of course, they would be afraid. You might get to looking at the wrong side and come up with a few things that, well, might even be more than embarrassing.
Well, that was not in our charter. Our charter was military intelligence, CIA, political and economic intelligence, and but still, they were leery of us.
Well, let's see, how can I ask this? Did they have good cause to be afraid, Ed?
Negative.
There was never a moment, Ed, where you and your team decided to target some of your own bosses or their interests?
Against the law, Art.
Well, of course it's against the law, Ed. A lot of things are against the law.
We were professional military officers, and there's not a code of ethics right there. There's just ethics, pure and simple.
Just ethics, pure and simple. All right, Ed, hold on. Hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. No, they would never, ever do anything like that, because it's against the law. I'm Art Bell, and this, in the middle of the night, is that strange program known as Coast to Coast AM. Keep your seats, but keep those belts on.
Sweet dreams are made of this. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
So why was the remote viewing program ended by the powers that be? A little bit of embarrassment, maybe, but mostly fear. That's really interesting. Mostly fear of those who were administering the program. When they saw what could be done, what was being done, they became afraid. Fear is what ended it. We've got Major Ed Ames here. He's now on a different telephone. We'll take a second to adjust here and see how this one works out. So fear, Ed.
Well, it wasn't just fear per se. It was also fear of association. Like everybody in a town where knowledge is power, and that's Washington, D.C. for sure. Everybody wanted us. Everybody that found out and was briefed on the existence of this unit wanted to use it, but they didn't want to get caught using it and have their colleagues associate them with this very controversial unit. So we began to look at ourselves as sort of the prostitutes of Washington, D.C. When the red light was on and under the cover of darkness, everybody wanted to be there and get intelligence that could be gotten no other way, but nobody wanted to associate with us openly.
Huh. That's understandable, I guess.
It is.
I deal
with police officers all the time, police chiefs. I just got through briefing one yesterday, and he said, "Look, I'm skeptical, but I need help, and I'm
desperate.
Willing to take any leads that I can." I said, "Look,
probably the word is desperate. I don't think they get psychics and remote viewers until they get to the D word, desperate."
That may change someday, but right now that's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, if they can do it through conventional means, they'd do it. So they're stuck. They're at the end of the road. And how many times does an agency in that condition come to you? I guess quite frequently, huh?
More and more, because they see how the more that our success rates get out there, the more that people see this, more willing they are to use us, because it's just facts are facts. If we can answer the mail, nothing else can, which is the very reason why the unit was created as a military tool, and now it's as a civilian agency, then we're going to get a lot of customers, and we do now.
All right. In the years that you've been on this program, you've said some really controversial, scary, apocalyptic-type things, haven't you?
I have indeed.
And you gained this reputation not on my program, although I'm sure it got considerably enhanced here, but it actually began back during the program itself when you had some, what would be the right word for it, recreational targets?
I think let's call them enigmatic or anomalous rather than recreational.
Well, they weren't ordered to be looked at.
Are you talking about the military program, Art?
Well, when you began to spread your wings a little bit in terms of the targets you assigned.
Look at two things. I had my team take a look at UFO Enigma, which I was very fond of as a personal pursuit.
That would rate right up there.
Uh-huh. And I looked at something over the horizon that was darkening the skies, literally and figuratively, that was very big, and I wanted to know what that was.
That would all qualify. So you kind of snuck these in, what, on off time, during their time?
Correct. I slipped them a Mickey as operations officer, because unconscious, when I train a student,
yes.
Or they learn via my training programs.
Yes.
Their unconscious is being trained to do all the work. And so there is a cutout, student is when they're first trained, particularly when they first learn, the student is not allowed to know exactly what the target is. We use a random number assigned to that particular target as a cutout. And I assign some of these very enigmatic, problematic, possible targets to students, slip them in once in a while in training missions.
Every now and then. Ed, how many of your students would you say have turned out in the end to have more talent for remote viewing itself than even you?
You know, that's hard to answer because the training techniques over the years, I've improved them so much, Art, that I don't know how I would have performed had I had availed myself of those self-same techniques 20 years earlier. I've been teaching and doing this for 20 years. But my gut feeling is that at least I now have an eye and an ear for the best, for who I recruit and hire. The team that I just got back with last night, the eight-member team, they're my best, and I hired them.
Understood.
I would say that half of them are probably better than me.
And does that talent that allows one to remote view actually have to do with one's, allow a little license here, psychic quotient, a psychic IQ?
It does to some extent. In my case, I would call myself my psychic IQ, my psychic antenna is about average, right there at the average mark. So I had to work much harder and much more to make up for that innate lack. My birthright didn't allow me to be really psychic. So I had to work harder to be an all-star.
How would you rate Ingo Swann?
Ingo Swann, who discovered the Wright brothers of remote viewing. He's the father of remote viewing. He's the one that discovered the fundamental principles of flight, if you will, the fundamental principles of remote viewing. He is one of the greatest living natural psychics in the West, if not on the planet, that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rate him right up there about 95%. But he doesn't know what we know now, and so we can run rings around even him. A lot of rings really fast. His head would spin. But we would not be here were it not for him and his discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Because of these systematic, rigorous techniques and in applying them to military problems and the kinds of problems that we deal with day to day now, as my professional team, we've learned a whole lot that Ingo was never aware of. As the Wright brothers of remote viewing.
All right. So even then, and certainly now, you've picked exotic targets. You, as opposed to the other remote viewers, you've decided to look at things like our sun, witness the kill shot prediction, and we'll talk about all of that. You've looked at, my gosh, you've looked at Lucifer. You've looked at some pretty odd things in your remote viewing career, really odd things. And that, of course, makes you a very interesting guest for talk radio. Most of the other remote viewers have rather held their public pronouncements.
Witness the turtle. It only makes progress by sticking its neck out. Now, yes, I'm eclectic, and I'm an adventurer just like you. In fact, you and I share many of the same interests.
Oh, we do.
I was not so much now, but was intensely interested in the UFO enigma. And yes, I did slip many, many, many hundreds of UFO-related targets to the military team and to my civilian team as well.
And collectively, with regard to the UFO enigma, what would you say?
I think there's just too much to say, Art. I wouldn't know where to start. I really would not know where to start. There's a system out there. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. I think when we talk about crop circles, I finally managed to bust the enigma of what crop circles are, and that took probably 15 years to do.
I know that's on the list here. No, but
what I would like to do is to establish contact with the agency that is creating those crop circles, and I don't mean George or whatever his name is.
The agency?
Yeah, agency.
When
not human. Not.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, so
the celestial agency, if you would.
Yeah, back to the UFOs for a second. Is it possible to state that the majority of them, or no, even some of them, are indeed piloted by or directed by alien, as we understand that word, alien intelligence?
Beyond a doubt, beyond any doubt that I or my colleagues have, yes.
Okay. The crop circles. Are the crop circles the doings of those same beings? Are they the doings of UFOs? What are crop circles?
They are produced by an alien agency for all intents and purposes, ones that we've talked about on your show for the last 7.5 years. They are produced by an other-than-human agency.
All right.
And their meaning is not in their form. They have no message except for one thing. The meaning is in the location, because the locations where they are produced are survival zones for what's coming.
Survival zones for what's coming.
Yes. They attract us, right? Albeit they are ephemeral. They're placed in ephemeral media, grasses, for the most part. Sometimes ice that melts. But they attract us with their beauty.
Yes.
Their enigmatic nature. They draw us into them. Well, that's a good thing, because these are the places. They mark out zones and belts, latitude belts, where survival will be something that's realizable for many people if they're there when the kill shot hits.
The kill shot. While we're on that subject, our son is doing it again. Now, we had a period earlier in the year that was historic. We had a sun flare that knocked everything right off scale. It was so gigantic. They're still measuring the echoes out into the cosmos of this event. It was so gigantic. We asked you about that. You said, yes, it was the shot over the bow.
Which you said was coming 2 weeks prior, I'm sure.
Yep, and that's right, you did. And that's one for the history books, believe me. And now the sun is unaccountably at it again. I mean, one X flares, and these giant spots suddenly coming around on the sun when we're on the downside of the cycle the way we are. Really weird stuff, Ed.
Well, the cycle is an interpolation and now an attempted extrapolation of past data. But what we're looking at, one of the real values of professionally executed remote viewing is that it can spot, albeit over the horizon, time horizon, it can spot discontinuities, things that are not predicted, unprecedented things. Unprecedented because we tend to look at, well, this is just another cycle or another war or something like that. What remote viewing can do is not pattern analysis in those terms, but spot something that's an anomaly or perhaps a discontinuity. In fact, I called this thing
the discontinuity.
A break in human cultural evolution.
Yeah, like a wall you couldn't see through. That's how I remember.
Yep.
Sort of eclipsing time and everything, just like a brick wall out there that you can't look past.
The end of an age.
The end of an age.
And again, yes, a catastrophe. It's going to present a real character-building opportunity for all of us.
Well, we live in an interesting moment when the New York Times is running about stories about the magnetic field flipping. There's a big controversy about whether during the course of that flip there are times where the Earth's magnetic field is slim and none, meaning there's very little protection, a la The Core. You remember the movie The Core? We talked about that. There's very little protection for the Earth, should there be a large sun eruption directed toward us, perhaps of the magnitude that you called the shot over the bow, something like that, directed at us at a moment of weakness in the magnetic field. Not good.
Well, actually, I don't think it's going to happen that way. I think what's going to happen is we're going to get, it's like the Star Trek, the the Enterprise. It's going to get hit by Klingon torpedoes to the point where the shields come down. Every time it gets hit, the shields go down a certain percentage, right?
That's true. It depends.
That's
actually
what's going to happen.
It actually, you know, when we get hit with the results of a flare, it actually depresses the magnetic field. It just pushes it down and depresses it a little bit, each one that hits us. So it boom, 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 and it would be very depressed. And then you could have that one last big corner ball shot.
That's what I think is going to happen. In fact, yeah. NASA is also reporting that these kinds of bursts from the sun over a long period of time could have possibly stripped the water that once covered Mars after first bringing down its magnetosphere. Once that comes down and that plasma from the sun comes down to the deck, it's literally blowing off atmosphere and water, right? And
yep.
So NASA's suggesting that that may be
what happened to Mars.
What happened to Mars, yeah. Now, I finally finished this Kill Shot DVD, and I put all the details in that. I made it real professional, and I made it real cheap, so that as many people as possible can get that.
A Kill Shot DVD.
Yeah, I finished producing it. It's being shipped now. I put all the details, everything that over the last 20 years, double-checked and triple-checked, put the details into that DVD. People
right.
that get that, pass it on to your friends and loved ones.
All right. How much time between the shot over the bow and the kill shot? An obvious question.
I'm afraid that the shot across the bow, which occurred on November 3rd of last year, is pretty darn close to the kill shot, which is a series of solar, very large solar flares, probably at the beginning of 2005. On your last show, and in the Kill Shot DVD, I mentioned that the chief signal, big red flag, the real harbinger of disaster and catastrophe on the Earth, where many things go wrong, we're overcome by events, and people die, is when a space shuttle is forced down to the deck by a meteor shower.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And the space shuttles are not flying until 2005. They were supposed to fly at the end of this year, but it's been postponed. I think STS 116 or something like that goes up, scheduled for March. But we know that when we see that, and the sun is covered with sunspots, it looks like it has the measles, and all kinds of meteors are coming down to the deck, so much so that the space shuttles cannot fly, that's when you need to be looking at wherever you need to go. Where you need to go is outlined, again, in the Kill Shot DVD, and that is generally speaking in areas that are historically demarcated by crop circles.
Well, Great Britain, other parts of Europe, much more so than this country, for example.
Not much more so than North America, though. Above 50 degrees, actually above 40 degrees, you start to get a lot of crop circle activity, particularly in southern Canada, in Saskatchewan, and to a certain degree, British Columbia.
Yeah, there have
particularly
been some.
Alberta and Saskatchewan.
Yep, there have been some up there.
There's been a lot up there. We just tend not to look that way because we're focused on the UK. But there's been a lot throughout. Yeah, I actually paint this picture in the DVD, so that's why I did that, so people can know what to look for, what to expect, and where to go.
So when this shuttle is forced down, the amount of time you'll have will be very short indeed, as in running time, or what?
Probably about 3 months max.
Oh, 3 months.
Yeah.
I know this is the hardest part of remote viewing, is tying down exactly these timelines, but of course people obviously always want to know about this kind of thing.
Well, that's why my team looked at the nearest preceding recognizable event, large event, right?
Sure, sure.
And what popped out of that was that particular event, a space shuttle being forced down, back to having to abort a mission because meteors were endangering it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a unique event.
What percentage of people do you see surviving such an event, Ed?
I don't know. My I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I mean, will there be masses of humanity, masses left, or?
Well, there'll be relative masses, but there'll be relative masses that don't make it through as well, too.
Oh, all right.
For instance, what will happen is for those of you on the dark side of the planet looking at the moon.
Yes, very quickly.
All of a sudden, the moon will look real bright and flash, right? Flash real bright. Well, that's a bad sign because the people on the day side
are having a real bad day. All right, Ed, stay right there. We'll be right back.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
There was once a motion picture that used this music as its opening theme. I wonder how many of you remember it. A scientist dropped a vial inside a biological military research facility, and they started running. And the guards at the gate started running, and the end of the world began. And I rather always thought that it might happen that way, but not according to Ed. It's going to be the kill shot. We'll be right back. We have gone yet to a third telephone with Major Dames. Ed, are you there?
I am.
Okay, good. I think and I hope this one will be better. We live in this, I said it earlier, Ed, we live in an era where it's like we've taken a step forward. Everybody's got a cell phone, an easy-to-use phone, and now we broke up the phone company. We've all got little plastic pieces of things made in China somewhere.
Yep, they're all made in China.
Anyway, as I said, the movie, of course, was The Stand, which was a remarkable movie. And there it ended, all from a biological accident. But you're suggesting, though not the end, close, certainly the end for many, and close to it for many more.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, and is it a situation, Ed, where people literally, I mean, are they killed from radiation or actual burns? You said the people on the night side of the Earth would see the moon light suddenly get very bright. And, of course, the people on the other side of the Earth, as you said, are having a bad day.
It appears to be a series of very large solar flares that very rapidly take out Earth's magnetosphere, the magnetic shield around the planet. And then the last ones, just like, again, a good example would be an example from the TV show Star Trek, where finally there's no shields left, and the Klingon warship fires its missiles, and there's nothing to protect the Enterprise from damage,
right.
And it becomes a hit. So it's that kind of thing. But this, there's other things, too, that we don't quite understand. Why, for instance, does this event, why is it concomitant with the passage of a large celestial body, which happens just about the same time?
The infamous Planet X.
Or whatever. We're not sure what the darn thing is, but it's large enough to have a gravitational effect on the Earth. Is it, one of my colleagues was suggesting that it's a mini black hole, but it's big, and it has a large gravitational effect on the planet. So what may be happening is this. That particular passing space body may itself take out the magnetosphere and allow what is normally an M-class flare or a non-effective,
right,
non-geo-effective X-class flare to come down to the deck. It's just too much too fast here. We're being overcome by events as early as 2005.
Well, one has but to read the New York Times to see they're talking about the magnetic field reversing, about it weakening up to 15% so far. Front page, New York Times. And the Sun, oh my goodness, the articles, and there has been a recent article about what the scientists are calling the most active period in 1,000 years for the Sun. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that's certainly correct.
And
I talk about that in this product that we just finished. Because I want people to know. And I don't care if they call me Dr. Doom or not. But, you know, there's a possibility that some people will act on this information. I'm going up to Edmonton, Canada to teach a workshop next month. And after the workshop, I'm going to be looking around. Because our data, our remote viewing data, is indicating that happens to be one of the most eminently survivable areas, not to say that it's going to be any walk in the Rose Garden.
I remember once, Ed, you said that time, or that crop circles were markers in time. Do you remember that?
I do. I certainly do.
How does that relate to and connect with, or does it? Or is this a reassessment?
It's a reassessment. It just took, probably 8 years to finesse the details out, because it's such a big thing. I mean, crop circles took 15 years to understand. What's the meaning of crop circles? We banged our head against the wall of that for a long time before just recently really realizing they mark out survival zones, survival belts and zones.
So does reassessment mean mistake? In other words, did you originally make a mistake on what they are?
I think that, I think that had to be called a mistake. And those were military team members that did that in a day when, in the beginning of a former company that I had, in a day when the protocols were not really tight, the bugs hadn't been worked out of the technology, but they have now. You know, we have a tight shot group in terms of our information, in terms of our data now. In fact, I just got off of a field mission yesterday, a one-week mission where we were able to narrow a reference point down to within 150 feet, and looking for a child's remains. And that took us 2 months to do that, but it only took us 10 minutes on the ground.
Yeah, I think I've been getting some email about that particular case.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we're dealing with a lot of headlines lately that, our weather, too. Now, is our current really, really weird weather connected to the activity on the Sun?
6 years ago on your show, I said that scientists do not realize the link, do not understand the linkage between our star and the weather here. And it's very complex, albeit very complex, and it's hard to pick out a pattern, hard to describe and objectify the parameters and the dynamics and the mechanics of that linkage, but nevertheless, remote viewers can detect it.
I don't know. How can there not be a linkage, Ed? It's the most powerful force.
It's counterintuitive, and yet unless you see unless you know scientifically, unless you're going to describe the actual dynamics mathematically and scientifically, it remains counterintuitive.
I wonder, Ed, have you looked at this pole reversal thing? You know,
Yes, I've looked at the magnetic pole reversal thing. I've also looked at the migration.
I want to talk about that. I mean, the birds are affected. I believe that mankind is also affected by our magnetic field. How could we not be?
Well, we have magnetite in our head.
Right.
And some of us have rocks as well. But magnetite's there. A very rapid change, a snap, for instance, in the magnetic field is going to take us all down. That's unprecedented, but I have a feeling that not only will the birds fall from the sky and walk around dazed, but so will humans. So that's one thing. But unless there is, that's a lot different than a core shift, which I outline in the Kill Shot DVD. The core shift will only happen not because of magnetic field changes, but because of gravitational effects. That's the only way the core is going to shift, and then that translates into an actual axis shift. So there may be magnetic effects that on the surface have profound consequences and catastrophic consequences, but that's not going to tilt the poles. That's going to require a large gravitational action, and that's where this passing space body comes in.
What actually would you think would be the effect on the Earth, on the weather, on man, as that process accelerated? And according to the story in the New York Times, the process appears to be accelerating. It's beginning to happen faster, in other words, perhaps even logarithmically. So what kind of effects on the world would there be as it flips?
If the flip is fast, all I can say, and we've done a little bit of work on this, humans would become disoriented momentarily. In fact, I think there's reason to believe that the Christian idea of the rapture is connected with that event. The biblical idea, apocryphal or otherwise, the idea itself that others have picked up historically may be connected with an event like that, a snap in a magnetic field. I'm not sure about that because we require much more research, but there's indications that we have as remote viewers that suggest that might be the case.
All right. So it's pretty worrisome stuff to even consider, but...
But the thing, in terms of survival, Art, we really are approaching a very interesting era where we've got the North Koreans ready to do something very interesting that will probably set the stage for a war, and warfare will accelerate. But as I've mentioned before in the past, something happens where all the warring parties, just as we're about ready to do the darn-darns to each other, everybody looks up and says, oh, you know what, and goes home, because their priorities shift. And that is concomitant with what that's right around the corner.
But you think
the PRK ready to do an open-air test of a nuclear weapon to raise up the ante in terms of nuclear blackmail. They're very frightened by our pullout. We're pulling out the 2nd Infantry Division and a lot of materiel. The North Koreans see that as a threat. They're going to up the ante, and they're going to pop. What they'll do is test a nuclear weapon probably in the sea, and that will probably set the stage for a nuclear tete-a-tete on the Korean Peninsula. But it won't last long because this other event
is going to just stop everybody.
Yes.
But you are convinced the North Koreans will detonate a nuclear weapon, first a demonstration-type deal in the ocean?
Yes, I think it's going to be a test first, and I think they'll do that at sea. And what we'll do is say, that's enough, but we're pulling our troops out, which means that we won't be able to occupy their land.
We'll say, that's enough. In other words, we'll lay down the gauntlet to them and say,
yeah.
You will not do that again or else?
That's correct, and then that will actually light the fuse for a war on the peninsula.
Huh.
While we're doing that, with whatever bullets we can scrounge, because we don't have many left, the People's Republic of China will just walk in a matter of probably 72 hours and take over Taiwan.
Well, that
and
would
the United States will let them.
Oh?
Yeah. Because we'll need the fleet in order to fight the war in the Korean Peninsula. And the Chinese know this. They come out the winners, no matter how you cut it. Once they become their own market, if they ever do, and they may soon, then they win economically as well.
Well,
don't forget, they remember how the U.S. won the Cold War.
I have heard generals testifying in front of congressional bodies and admitting to the public, which you never hear them do ever, that we are now spread too thin, that we now may not be able to respond to a major event should it occur. We are spread that thin. They are now admitting that publicly.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a former strategist in that arena, I can second that. What will happen is the Chinese will actually either directly or indirectly instigate a war on the Korean Peninsula, or at least rub their hands together when they see it coming, because it's coming. And the North Koreans will do something.
And it's their cover to take Taiwan.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they come out the winner no matter how you cut it, Art. In the end, or in short term, no. Midterm to long term, they win. But what they don't know is what I'm telling you now. Nobody's going to win because everybody's going to look up and the world's going to change and all the priorities are going to be rearranged very quickly.
It's so strange. It was the late Ronald Reagan, of course, who said several times in public, wouldn't it be something if something came along that was so big it gave us a common enemy suddenly, something from outer space? He wondered about that kind of thing aloud. A president wondering about that aloud is a little unusual.
I'm sorry, sir, but what he was referring to is something like, what was that movie,
Independence Day?
Independence Day. That's what our former president was referring to.
Yes.
But what I'm saying...
But it wouldn't matter, would it?
I guess it would. I'm talking about a Mad Max scenario where it's every man for himself and it's back to the raw, pure nature of, you know, the worst of the worst Mad Max scenario, because there isn't a common enemy. It's just survival. Look around and everybody's in the same boat and there is no enemy. There's just disaster. It's a very different scenario.
Well, a common fear, a common disaster, a common whatever, yeah. You're right, though. I'm sure he was referring to the Independence Day scenario. I'm certain of that. You're saying, though, this would be such a natural event that it would virtually eclipse everything, and all that would be left would be Mad Max days of survival.
Yes, for a while, until homeostasis or some degree of control was there. It's very big. It's huge. We don't know what things are going to look like afterwards, except for one thing. We know that when the dust clears, and I don't know how long that'll take, 10, 15, 20 years, there is another race here on the planet to help us rebuild. This, we briefed Lawrence Rockefeller on as a contract long ago, and I stand by that. The first time that another race will be here is after the dust clears, to help the human race rebuild, and they will stay.
When Mr. Rockefeller commissioned you to do this study and you gave him this answer, this report, how did he react? Do you know?
No, I don't. No, it was through a cutout former congressional aide that we passed that to him.
I see. I was just curious how he digested such information.
I was curious as well.
Sure. I bet you were. Well, this is such an incredible event that it's almost hard, after you've talked about this, to talk about other things. There are other things, but this is such a, oh, I don't know, not world-ending, but world-changing event. And you really in your heart believe that these crop circles, other than the ones concocted by students, which are no doubt some of them, and how do you know which are the real ones and which aren't?
Oh, it's easy for us as remote viewers because we can go back to the creation of the circle, and either we see some folks in the field.
person walking around.
Well, of the remote, of those you have remote viewed, Ed, what percentage are real, as in the students or whatever didn't do them?
You know, we get a sense as a team for which ones are real or not. We're not going to waste it. Remote viewing is such hard work.
Yes.
We're not going to waste our time on anything that we even suspect was laid out by by anybody.
And
like
so?
But having done that, I only remember two where we put the pen down after 15 minutes of work and said, because we can tell. Yeah, I won't go into technical details, but we can tell very quickly that there's nothing in the sky or nothing coming down from above or nothing strange. All we have are human beings in a field. That's it. And we back out at that point. Because it's a very different signature.
You're saying, I take it the sample is pretty good size. You're saying the great majority of them are real.
I am indeed. That they're actually created by a system out there. An outside agency, if you will. And in this case, they're apparently pointing out and measure. Maybe it's a degree of measuring intelligence. If you have the wherewithal evolutionarily to understand that these circles are places to go to save yourself,
yes,
then those are the people that should be saved.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm guessing.
Well,
that's my surmise.
Okay. Hold that thought, Ed. We'll be right back. We're at the half-hour point. My guest is Dr. Doom, Major Ed Dames from the High Desert. I'm Art Bell.
Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The First Time Caller Line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I was just reminded by a friend of what the late Father Malachi Martin said once of the third secret of Fatima. Do you remember that? He said, imagine, paraphrasing here, of course, imagine the very worst you can imagine, the worst terror, the biggest horror your mind can conjure. As bad as that is, he said, it's worse. And then he said one more thing. He said, look to the sky for it. You remember that? Look to the sky for it. This mental image of looking up some night, just being out, looking up some night at the moon, and seeing the moon suddenly flare bright. And then imagining what that means for the people on the sun side of the Earth. It's kind of a... You know, a lot of times in radio, you've got to draw pictures with words. In the movie Core, they took I think it was a peach, you know, and the scientist put the peach on a fork and took some hairspray and pointed it at the peach and then lit up the hairspray. And you got a blowtorch then, of course. He said, this is what's going to happen to the Earth when the magnetic field collapses and we get hit. And, of course, it turned it into nothing more than a burnt peach pit. So that is really, in essence, what you're talking about. I mean, people are going to get fried alive. What does it mean, Ed, for the people that are on the dark side of the globe when this happens? What, in other words, are they saved from this or given a reprieve or what?
I think what happens is that the Earth actually undergoes, the way we've outlined it, as the way my team has outlined it, is the Earth actually undergoes a wobble and a tilt. And that happens just prior or with this particular solar event. In fact, the event seems to be concomitant with this passing space body, this large gravitational body. So when the Earth, when there's an axis shift that may happen just prior to these series of kill shots, the Earth becomes sort of like a rotisserie. You don't want to be in the direct line of this of these protons coming down to the deck. That's why I think these areas are marked out by crop circles.
Uh-huh.
They generally appear to be in the northern latitude, a few in the south,
yes,
Australia, but
that's
most
right.
On a line, I've got it detailed in our DVD, on a line that goes through Russia, Poland, all the way up to southern Finland, and then through the UK, and right through lower Alberta.
All right. Well, the implication of this, Ed, would be that those who are watching over us or watching us, those in the UFOs, if you will, are actually benign and in the end helpful. But if they're really out there and they really have all this incredible ability and they're warning us with these subtle, and they are kind of subtle, I mean, why not say, stand here not to get roasted, but instead there are these beautiful designs. So why not prevent this roasting in the first place? Do they have that kind of power or they don't?
I think they're working in within this the idea of a prime directive where they can't interfere, but they can in terms of carrot and stick, they can propose carrots in the form of a conundrum, a puzzle to be solved. That's why I think these consciousness tools, the ones that I'm talking about here in our era, remote viewing, are really an evolutionary step, because we can see the meanings of things that one might think is alien. We don't associate crop circles with anything other than aesthetics or nonsense, because they're not utilitarian. We can't do anything with them.
That's
we don't understand them, so what the heck?
How much, what is your confidence level in the meaning of these crop circles now?
100%. 100%.
Well, you've never been one to downplay your accuracy.
You asked me personally.
Yeah, that's right.
No, you asked me personally as an individual, I'd stake my life on it, so that's what I would do. I might die because I'm wrong, but that's the choice I make. When, you know, as a military officer, as a G2, an S2, an intel officer, when the boss comes to you, the general says, "Okay, dames, which way are they coming?"
Yeah.
You don't say, "Well, sir, you know, it looks like they may be flanking us to the north, and then on the other hand, they may be cutting off a logistics tail and then a head-on."
He already knows all that.
You don't do that. You have to put it on. You have to put your bars on the line and say they're coming this way. So that's the environment in which I grew and developed. And so I like to make really sure I'm right, but sometimes we're wrong. This time, it's so complex. All I can say is the kill shot's coming. These are the areas we think are safe. But this is what's going to happen, and the dynamics and the mechanics are unprecedented. So if I would be the first one to tell you, I don't understand the geophysics behind what's coming.
Well, you have always talked and told us about the need to live underground, which would certainly, for a time at least, I suppose, be the mode that would be the safest in view of what you're talking about here. Yes?
in terms of heat, yes, and in terms of the winds that would follow either a sunburst, or that's a lot of plasma pushing atmosphere around, or a real axis shift. The Earth's axis shifting, and there's a time delay, and we talked about this before, winds picking up to 300 miles an hour. Those two things, it would be advantageous to be underground or in a cement bunker or something, or in a slot canyon that would protect you from heat and wind for a period of a few weeks.
And allow you to live on to this wonderful Mad Max world where, well, like in all the movies we've seen, everybody fends for themselves and people are on motorcycles with machine guns and ray guns and all kinds of things.
Where there's life, there's hope.
Well,
eternal,
yes.
I guess.
Yes, I suppose so. These are such dire predictions. They would almost seem to collide with or eclipse even, you know, what's written in the Bible about the way it's all going to come to a conclusion. What about that? I mean,
no, I think it's pretty consistent in terms of Armageddon and apocalyptic predictions and prophetic visions that the prophets have had. It's just that they had no way of putting them in. I'm faced in these days and times in a technical environment with the difficulty of describing geophysically what we're seeing. Even going to the experts and having them try to interpret our data for us, you can imagine what the biblical prophets thought about something like television, which we now know as remote viewers is the false prophet. So how? That's what biblical prophets called television. They said there's something out there that paints a false picture and sets the stage for the Antichrist, and it's the false prophet. Well, it turns out to be television, of all things.
Television is the false prophet. Well, I can go along with that.
I mean, when you remote view that term, that topic, we call this a topical search in my business, where you take an idea and instead of a physical thing.
Yes.
And you look at all the associative, tangible, intangible ideas, they're all remote viewers producing in vis-a-vis that particular English search term, the false prophet, a television.
I watched a cleaning lady the other day with a big smile on her face, holding up a check for $100-something million after taxes that she had just won this incredible mega lottery. And I was happy for her, but, you know, at that moment I thought, how come nobody ever stands there and says, hi, I'm Ed Dames, and I just won $140 million after taxes because I remote viewed the number?
I'll give you a three-part answer to that. One, yes, we can win lotteries, okay?
Yes.
Two, I just got back with 8 remote viewers who, in 106 degrees, were digging for the remains, 25 years of remains of a 12-year-old girl disappeared in 1979, okay? We had to do 17 remote viewing targets at an hour each times 8, actually sometimes 2 hours each. It took us 3 months to solve this case. Everybody traveling from all over the U.S. to a spot to reconstruct the scene, talk to the mother, tell the mother how her child died, who killed the child, those kinds of things.
Yes.
Okay, and my team members they said, Ed, can't we have a break? And so I'm rewarding them. We know where there is a small treasure in California that's accessible and available to us, a lost treasure.
A treasure.
A treasure.
A treasure.
So that's
well,
what these guys want to do. I mean, they need a break. And
okay.
They have a place.
I need a break. We all need a break from the kill shot stuff. So we're going to prove remote viewing by finding a treasure. Now, this is truly practical. A treasure. God, that's great.
Practical.
What kind of treasure, Ed?
It's some gold bars that a man who died stashed away. And nobody knows where. It's kind of like the Lost Dutchman mine idea.
Sounds
but
like a
older man hid some gold bars and
yes.
Then died, and nobody knows where they are. So they're going to be ours.
This sounds almost like a letter from Nigeria. That's a joke, Ed.
Yeah. I got it. But as soon as they do that, and we split the earnings, then we're going to run. We're going to run the BTK strangler.
So it's back to work,
right?
Torture
them, kill them, strangle them in Wichita, who's been on the land who's been taunting police for almost three decades.
That's right.
We're going to go and hunt him down. We're going to become that person's, that monster's nightmare. But my folks need a break.
Is there any way, since we're there for a moment, that you're becoming that person's nightmare would be, well, that person would become aware that they have been targeted by you and your team?
I'm going to make, no, not only in their dreams, perhaps in the dreams, that's all. Otherwise, unless they're very psychically sensitive, the only way they're going to find out is when I tell the Wichita Eagle newsroom and a few places there that we're coming after him.
Yeah.
And then he's going to know, because he wants attention, and by God, we're going to give him attention. If you know what he's done, you'll know why, too. Heinous crimes, terrible, terrible crimes, a monster beyond belief. So he wants attention, and we're going to give him attention.
Well, I know this is a thing of motion pictures, but it does, I mean, doesn't it ever occur to you guys that if you were really on to a brutal, cold-blooded murderer, and they became aware of the fact that you were on to them, as, for example, in reading it in Wichita Star, that they might come after you?
I know what I'm doing, Art.
Well, I don't
in terms of my team is armed.
Yes.
We're honestly armed.
Ah.
We are honestly coordinating with the police. We don't do anything stupid on the ground. I have a backup team that does, and those of us, we're very sure where this individual will be when we move in with the law enforcement. And we know where he is all the time once we start this project. And if he makes a move toward any of us as individuals anywhere geographically, we're going to know he's on the move.
Well, I don't think it's out of line for me to suggest that as a real danger. I mean, you are dealing with a known, cold-blooded killer. And if the killer were to read in the newspaper that you were monitoring his every move, and he believed that, that's all that would need to be, that he would believe it, he would come after you or your team or whatever.
That's easier said than done. Anyway, it's totally easier said than we run the same thing with terrorists. All you know, it's part of the job. Any police officer, the police officers go public and say we're after you, so that's a threat there. But this time it's different. We're a real combat multiplier. We are going to be able to get the goods, just like we did on this little girl's murderer. So, what's he going to do? How is he going to do it? We don't see any problem there.
Back to the gold bars for a second. Look, if you guys uncover a bunch of gold bars...
We'll take a picture.
At the very least, Ed, that's the time when Ed Dames, the remote viewer, stands in front of the cameras when they say, how did you know? And that's your moment to stand there and drive remote viewing right through the roof by saying, I remote viewed the location.
Yeah, well, we did that. We were on the front page in the newspaper in Washington and on the TV news there. But yeah, people like that money, and it packs a wallop in this day and age. And my team thinks it's fun, and I think it's fun too. But as soon as we get it, these guys are going to be in the mind of this BTK strangler in Wichita. We'll take a break, and then we'll go after these folks. Because in the end, it's good against evil.
Over the years, you have alternately taken on and then sworn off, then taken on, then sworn off, going after the killers of children, going after killers and bad guys in general. You said the work is grueling and backbreaking, and you were sick of it. That's what I remember.
Well, I wasn't taking a break, a vacation. So we'll get the gold bars and take a break and have some fun.
So, the pressures, I've heard you get pretty emotional about this stuff. So the pressures of remote viewing this sort of thing really must be pretty heavy at times. I suppose there's times when you're strong psychically and it's not getting to you, but there's other times when it gets to you.
Listen, this is a noble tool, and I think hunting serial killers and child killers is a noble use for a noble tool. I think the kill shot, looking at that and preparing people psychologically, they can do what they want afterwards. But your show,
on your show, there's a big audience there, and it gets the word out. So even psychologically,
yes.
Truth, people have a truth button, and they can smell a snake oil salesman, and they can choose for themselves what's real and what's not, what's true and what's not. And the work is more interesting than it is backbreaking art. I have a fascinating job. I think you would agree with me.
I do, and we're catching you on a very up day, but I do remember times, Ed, when you were really, I guess, almost depressed by what you were doing, and you
maybe
were swearing.
Morose. Morose and lugubrious.
Morose. Morose, that's a good word. You were morose about it. I'm sick of this stuff. I'm sick of getting in these guys' minds, that kind of thing.
Well, we all said that up there in Washington on this case, and we decided to take a break, to do something that's fun with remote viewing, as long as we have some time left, and we decided to do that. So I wasn't taking a break. Now we're going to take a break, have some fun with it,
okay.
make some money, and then go back to the grind.
Well, that'll be a headline grabber for sure, and
people like that.
That'll happen pretty soon. I mean, you're in control of the timing of this, right?
Yeah, we begin the project in about 3 days. It should take us no more than 2 months to actually drive up, grab the stuff, take a picture, and go.
The one subject that has drawn more moments of silence as I've done interviews with remote viewers has been when I asked about remote influencing, and that, of course, the ability to influence somebody else's mind from a distance, or influence a material object with your mind, whatever, remote influencing. I've asked remote viewers about it, and they all get quiet for a moment when you ask them whether it's possible or not.
There are two remote viewers, I won't mention the name, former military types that foisted this on the public. And they said that we actually did this in practice. It's beyond embellishment. It did not happen. Can it be done?
Yes, can it? That was the moment.
Yeah.
Just like that. So,
telekinesis and psychokinesis are our sister science. I mean, they're diametrically opposite in many ways. You know that can be done because you know what we did to your clock last year.
I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So it's possible, but it has to be done in highly controlled, very controlled, technically controlled circumstances.
All right, hold it right there. We will get phoned in this next hour. One of the time zones out there is just about 2 a.m., I believe.
It's 2 a.m. here at home. It's 2 a.m. because I'm still warm.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
When it's Major Ed Daines, it's our job to bring you down. That's the job description. And we're not done yet either. If the sun isn't enough, there's going to be some other little problems to deal with, like disease, for example. We'll get to that in a moment. I want to at least cover in brief the major points we wanted to get to tonight with Major Daines. And one of them is disease. And you've got something to say about that tonight, right?
Well, I've been mentioning for years, Art, that again, beginning back when I was training officer of the military unit, the military sci-fi unit.
Yes.
Looking over the horizon, we saw two big things. And none of those two big things were a nuclear war, by the way. Okay?
Right.
That's good. One of them was what we're talking about tonight. Turns out that one of those was what we're talking about tonight, the kill shot. And at some juncture, I'd like to give your listeners the order number for that DVD we just produced.
Of course. Now's a good juncture as any. Go ahead.
You think? Okay. For they can either go on the web to thekillshot.com to order this DVD, or they can call toll-free 1-866-607-8439.
Okay, how much is the DVD?
$24.95.
And then
we kept the price really low. It's expertly produced. It's got all the details that I've been talking about. Well, I couldn't talk about the details, but it covers in detail everything we've been talking about here. That same number of people in Edmonton, Canada, basic workshop on August 14th and 15th, they can call the same number for that workshop. Edmonton's just cleaning up after what they're calling a 200-year freak storm, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, Ed, there's not a week that goes by that I'm not commenting now on some total freak weather occurrence. I mean, it's all around us. We're like frogs in boiling water. What about those who say, look, he's just out to make a buck? And that's the usual criticism, you know, that gets heaped on somebody like you. Turns out a DVD for $24.95 on...
Well, I make my living through my products. Our public service work, it comes out of our own pockets. It's all volunteer, and we refuse to take a reward. Period. We take no rewards, and public service work is gratis. I make a living out of, as an educator. My workshops and my LearnRV.com training site.
And selling DVDs and videotapes and stuff like this and the remote viewing courses that you've sold. That is your business. So it is.
That's correct. That's my business.
So you are out to make a buck.
That's right.
Well, okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's right. And I enjoy my work. I love my work. I totally love it. As long as I'm alive, I probably will love it.
All right. We do want to talk about disease a little bit because you think there is...
The other thing that we saw, and this is circa 1984, 1985, 1986, the other things that we were describing over the horizon were dying babies, human babies. And they were dying because what we now know, the reason that we know now is something was wrong with the milk. What was wrong with the milk, and we didn't know this until a couple of years ago, was that there's no milk. It's not that there's something wrong with the milk, which was an erroneous a bit of analysis back then. It's that there are no cows left. And there are no cows because the cows have died from a disease. And long ago, I thought that was some type of a bovine AIDS. This is 1986, right?
Yeah, oh, I... Look, people should actually go back. People should go back and listen to the programs that we're talking about right now because you did say those things back then.
Yeah.
You sure as hell did. And so, are we talking about mad cow, Ed?
I think that we are. Either that or a bovine tuberculosis art. It's one or the other or a new one, something like that. The point is that right now the two diseases that are paramount in the bovine world are bovine spongiform encephalopathy with its human, you know, its human counterpart, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, mad cow disease.
Yep.
And bovine TB, which is a very, very serious killer to bovine tuberculosis. Those two diseases and some minor ones that could become major apparently kill all the cows. In fact, all of America's dairy dairy cows.
This is my absolute nightmare. You're talking about it. This is my nightmare. I cannot imagine life without beef. I just can't.
Well, life is, yeah, I can accept that, but a lot of people can't imagine dying tomorrow, and many people will, and it will become it'll be a surprise.
Oh,
by surprise.
I doubt most people anticipate dying tomorrow, Ed. It's just not one of those things you do.
But many people will. Many people will keel over from a heart attack, they'll get in a car accident or something else like that.
Sure.
Life has a beginning and life has an end.
Sure.
For all of us.
Sure.
So, but we don't imagine it because we don't think about it. But I'm telling you now, lots of babies, human babies, are in trouble because all of a sudden we will find that most of our herds are infected and we won't be able to use those cows as beef and we won't be able to use the cows to produce milk.
Yeah, and for anybody who doubts what we're saying here, I'm serious when I say go back and listen to the archives many years before Mad Cow, many years before a lot of things, Ed Dames was talking about these. Now, over the years, some of the criticism that you've taken, Ed, is because, well, it hasn't happened yet. I get emails like that. You know, he was wrong. Well, they don't understand that you're not wrong because some of these things have not occurred yet, and that yet some of them have, like the shot over the bow, clearly occurred. I don't think anybody would argue with that now.
What we're picking up on when we look out ahead, kind of an over-the-horizon time radar, when we do this with our mind is outside of time. If you think of time as the fourth dimension, then in a very simplistic way, think of mind as the fifth dimension. Mind can look down over all this broad panoply of events, and it can look out to some degree from our perspective in time, just like the prophets did.
Mm-hmm.
But they did that spontaneously. We do it on call. It takes us a long time and a lot of work, but we do it on call. We look out ahead and we look at the big things first. Yes, we could look at new technologies or the form that what we used to call a computer would take in the future, all that kind of stuff. What do advanced deep space propulsion systems look like? What does all that look like? We could see that. But what we're focused on is, oh, my God, look at that, that type of thing.
Sure.
Big spikes ahead, bridge out ahead type of thing. And those two biggest things for us as both a trained military team and a very advanced civilian team now, advanced because the training techniques and have been improved and all the bugs have been worked out. What we're seeing is no cows and no beef and no milk and dying babies because of that. That we were looking at clearly in 1986.
All right, here we go, Ed. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Howdy.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Where are you?
I'm in Salt Lake City, and my name is Mike.
Okay, Mike. Pepper Major Dames with a question.
Major Dames?
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay, Major Dames, weren't there record crop circles in the late 1800s?
Yes.
Well, then, how could that be an American military project?
He didn't say it was.
Oh, I thought you said it was a military project.
No, he did. Well, did you, Ed? You didn't say that. You clearly indicated these were done by other intelligences.
I said another agency. Whenever I use the term agency,
you confused him. Yeah, you confused the man. You meant...
I meant they're alien in nature.
In the broadest sense. Agency in the very broadest sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you have it. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Dames. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
I'm doing all right, sir.
My name's Steve. I'm calling from Midland, Texas.
Yes.
And my question to your guest was about the kill shot.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen, per se, if we were in a solar eclipse and the kill shot would happen? Would the moon shield us, or would it be just like a shotgun sending us tons of fragments?
It'd be like hitting the lottery is what it would be, right, Ed?
The kill shot is a series of solar flares, a series, a staccato series of solar flares. If the moon were there and it would be an eclipse, that, remember, it takes, even with protons moving a million miles an hour, it takes a little while for them to hit the Earth, too, and they're spread out. We have a very good good diagram on Art Bell's site tonight about what that looks like. So the moon's not going to be in between that big blob. Think of a lava lamp.
He was hoping for some miracle shield.
Yeah. Probably have to pray for that, or pray for guidance and see what pops out of that.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes. Thank you, Art.
You're welcome.
Major Dames, I like you. I'm one of the people that follow your predictions and things that are going to happen. I've seen a lot of them come true. Recently, there was a report of blight out in Wichita, fungus on wheat.
Yep, that's right.
You had mentioned there would be some kind of big event UFOs or something from space. We had that in Mexico about the time you mentioned it would happen. We've had a lot of space debris, meteors falling to Earth. Does this have anything to do with Planet X?
I don't know. I don't know. All I'm looking at is events. It's things are happening too fast right now, and all I'm looking at is those events. And by the way, when you say you like me, you don't know me.
I
could
like
be somebody. I'm not really a nice guy. I sound nice on the radio, but you don't know me, so you don't know if you would like me or not.
Look, Ed, there's plenty of people who hate your guts. Go ahead and take the like stuff when it comes along. It's rare enough.
You tell it like it is.
You know why I say that, Art? Because I'm beginning not to trust anybody. From what I've seen, this is how jaundiced I have become from seeing these child killers. So that's why I say that I don't trust anybody after what I've seen. The person that killed this little girl, everybody in the community trusted, and the person that for 25 years was harangued by the law enforcement and moved out, was everybody was suspicious of too. So what, you know?
I have a good friend who tells me every day he likes people less and less and likes his dog more and more.
Yeah, there you go.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, hello, Art.
Yes.
This is Randy in Olympia.
Hello.
I've talked to you a few times on 75 meters.
I'm yes.
The weakest one of the bunch. You're always telling me to put more fire to the wire.
Yes.
Anyway, Ed, how are you doing this evening?
Probably better than you. I'm back in Polynesia.
There you go. Well, I have a question that I'd like to ask you, and you've indicated that after, quote-unquote, the dust settles, that an alien race will
another
be
race.
Around.
Another race.
Another race, right. Well, that's very well worded because of what I'd like to ask. I'm assuming that it's not going to be Doliascusius or the Greys.
No, they look humanoid. They look a little
right,
bit...
Exactly. I'm thinking what I've been getting is it's more than likely to be Australis sapiens or the Nords. Would you concur with that, or are you?
No, I wouldn't, because I've never looked at and investigated using our specialized methods and techniques what those things mean, the Nords or I don't know.
Okay.
What we do is look at what's there. We describe what's there, and we don't give a name to them. They're human looking. They're a little bit sturdier and have more rugged features than we are,
right.
But nevertheless,
right.
Yeah.
Right, like they have been through a lot and have had a tough time themselves. I
have no idea. We haven't pursued. We've been too focused on this time right here, rather than go forward and do a study on them. Having said that, however, I am very interested in contact So that would be nice to be. That's one of the reasons why I'd like to hang around. I'd sure like to be able to
be part of
coffee with those folks. You know?
Be part of contact. Yes. Caller?
Yes.
Anything else?
Yeah, I did have one other question anyway. A person just having at least maybe 5 feet of earth berm all the way around them and enough of a water supply, and that could last being in, hold out, say, for a month or two. And what would be the duration of the successive shots?
All right, that's a very good question. In other words, Ed...
I think that 5 feet, if you're in the wrong place, is not enough. 5 feet, if you're in those belts and zones that are near the major areas where crop circles have been laid historically, are probably enough, but you still have to protect yourself from the winds. I've sat down with NOAA scientists in the past, and they've done some back-of-the-envelope calculations, and it looks like high winds for at least 2 weeks subsiding thereafter, going from 150, 200, 300 miles an hour, worst case,
mm-hmm.
back down over a period of 2 weeks to 90 degrees, and very dark skies for quite a while.
So short of being in those fortunate areas, you, for example, in Polynesia, are going to be in your cave. It's going to take a cave or something like it, right?
I don't know. Yeah, if a lava tube or something like that. It has to be relatively high, though. You don't want to be near the coast, and you don't want to be near a nuclear reactor, most of which are on the coast, because they're going to break, and you're going to have all these mini Chernobyls right next door.
Wonderful. It does make sense, though. I know we have double containment nuclear facilities in this country.
But if they can't cool themselves and the cooling systems break, and the major cooling system is the sea, then they're going to overheat.
Absolutely. And so there would be a pockmarked situation across the U.S., right?
Well, it wouldn't be pockmarked necessarily. It would be hot, though, really, really hot. And
hot zones, we call them then, whatever.
Chernobyls, mini Chernobyls.
So there could be, what, hundreds of miles, thousands, hundreds of miles at least, or what?
You're gonna see in certain areas, for instance, Tokyo, north and south of Tokyo, and places like Three Mile Island, those kinds of things, where once cooling can no longer be attained, and they can't shut the reactors down, they're gonna start leaking gas.
What kind of sphere? It would depend, I suppose, on winds and a lot of things. But
I think the permutations are so great that we wouldn't, as remote viewers, we wouldn't even try to calculate, you know, any of the permutations. But what we can do, and what we have been doing, is looking at those safe zones, which might not necessarily be exodus points, but we know that there are certain safe zones, and they appear to be generally north of, as we put down in the Killshot DVD, north of about 48, 46 degrees, something like that.
Very quickly, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Toronto. Okay.
Okay. Main question is, you know, I understand that your guest is pretty accurate. But there was another remote viewer, I think by the name of Lynn Buchanan, that was on Coast to Coast some time ago, and he says there is no Planet X. And just with all due respect, I don't know, you know, who are we to believe? Do you know what I mean?
That is I recall his saying that. Are you aware, Ed, that Lynn has said there's no Planet X?
I'm not aware of that, no.
I wasn't specifically aware of it. I don't exactly remember.
And who to believe is a personal choice.
Well, yes, but the caller raises an awfully good point. Both of you hold on for a second. I mean, he really does raise a good point. If you have two remote viewers, both of good repute, as it were, but they're saying very different things about something so gigantic, well, that is conceivably a problem, isn't it? We'll ask and we'll explore when we get back. From the high desert in the middle of the night, you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Love you, baby, we do, but we don't hold much back. Major Ed Dames is my guest, and he's all yours this upcoming half hour. Well, all right. Once again, Major Ed Dames, and he's got a new DVD that's coming out, and it's a biggie. It's all about the kill shot. Is it called The Kill Shot?
It is indeed. There's a website that's called thekillshot.com, and the DVD is called The Kill Shot. It's shipping now, Art.
Wow. Well, at the very least, it's a hell of a coffee table DVD. Everybody is going to ask you, what in God's name is that? The Kill Shot. And you'll just calmly look up and say, oh, that's the DVD all about our sun destroying the Earth, or pretty close. Should get a conversation going, if nothing else will.
I'll send you one. You'll like it, Art.
I would enjoy that, Ed. You know my address?
I do.
I would very much enjoy that.
Fire one off.
All right. Let us continue. Now, caller, still there, caller?
Yes.
You know, you point out, or you say, that Lynn Buchanan said there is no planet X. I personally can't attest to his having said that, because I don't remember it. But if he did, well, let's just take it as if he did, Ed. And you say, well, you know, these are opinions. But I'm with the caller in a way. In other words, if remote viewing is repeatable science, then the remote viewers should, for the most part, agree.
They have to be professionals. Lynn Buchanan was one of the three. I was the training officer. Lynn Buchanan was one of three military members of that unit who did not complete my course. They were dismissed by me because they could not adhere to the rigor of the training protocols.
Caller?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess my question extends even past that in a way. Okay. There's a psychic that's probably the most world-renowned, Sylvia Brown, whom you've had on your show a number of times.
Of course, yes.
And she's mentioned nothing of this. She says something similar in a way that in 100 years she cannot see past that, meaning...
That's interesting.
Meaning nothing will be... And actually she's writing a book on...
So she sees her own discontinuity is what you're saying.
Right, and I'm just like an average person. I mean, I have an open mind, but you know, I'm not a flake. But I have an open mind, and you know, I'm trying to
maneuver my way around.
All right, go ahead.
What we're talking about, the difference between psychics and remote viewers is one of rigor. Remote viewing is a way of bypassing. It's direct knowledge. It's a way of knowing without thinking. There's no overlay of personal biases or conditioned thought patterns allowed. There's no imagineering, no artistic license, just hard, cold, objective facts. Psychics can't do this. That's why information produced by psychics can't be used in life or death situations, or where the use of deadly force is sanctioned. Psychics gravitate toward an experience, which turns their information into crap. Remote viewers specialize in the production of very high-value data, which disallows, for technical reasons I won't elaborate on, a virtual experience of the target. So the remote viewing student is taught how to conduct an end run around the thinking process and creative imagination, and to distinguish and separate out those things from actual target-related data. The psychics can't do this. They have to be taught to do it. They don't know when, they don't know at what point where their imagination crosses over and overlays the target-related data. There's no rigor, no structure. It's like them playing a piano without ever having learned music. It might sound good, but think of how much better it would sound if they learned the structure. And that's what we have.
How many people with psychic ability have intentionally sought you out to apply that discipline to it and improve what they do?
Hundreds. Hundreds. But I've only accepted into professional programs less than, say, 30. Because many psychics have really big egos that they cannot set aside. I have a big ego, but I know how to set it aside when my pen hits the paper and I go into this very alert remote viewing state. I can strap the ego back on when I'm done. But psychics, sometimes they've been told how good they are so much, they sometimes can't get shucked off that ego when they start the session, and no matter how many times you bang them about the head and shoulders, they still think they're right. And that's the problem. They're thinking, and we are not allowed to think during a session in remote viewing.
I don't get a lot of emails saying, gee, you know, Ed ought to get some self-assurance and a little ego, you know. I don't get a lot of those.
Right. It's both arrogance and confidence, but all of that is still ego, and it has to be out the door when you do a session.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Dames.
Yes, greetings, Art and Ed, and it's another great show.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Dames, you mentioned a term earlier, rapture, and I was wondering if you knew that Jesus Christ stated prophetically that the sun would be darkened and that the stars would fall from heaven. Do you believe, sir, that you're seeing the same thing?
All right,
fair enough. Jesus was perhaps a remote viewer.
All right, hold it right there. Let's see. Is it all coinciding biblically, Ed, for you?
Not all of it, but because of the because of the long periods of time. And by the way, I'm pretty familiar in terms of translation with everything that Jesus Christ was purported to have said, and I don't remember him saying that. I do remember prophets saying that, reading about that, but not Christ himself. I know that Christ said this. When asked when it would begin, he said, allegedly, that it will begin when, the abomination of desolation is standing where it ought not, which is the contemporary translation of that, and then it would all begin. Now, I've remote viewed that because I was very interested in that and Jesus of Nazareth. And I know what it means, but I won't say it on the air because it's so controversial that I'll lose a lot of friends and make a lot of enemies, more than I have now.
That usually doesn't stop you.
This time it does. It's a very, very controversial. I'll tell you off air, or if your listeners have learned remote viewing, they can hit that topic themselves.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Ed from Berlin, New Mexico.
Hello.
Ed, what is the possibility that it is not the space shuttle being involved in this precursor event, but the space station?
Oh, what an interesting question.
That's a great question. It is a possibility. The best sketches that we have, the majority of the sketches are the shuttle. The majority of them are the shuttle.
But couldn't you be seeing the shuttle on a mission to rescue those people in the station?
Yes, we can. It could be that indeed. But the best information we have is that the shuttle's up there by itself when it comes down. That's all. And the causative agency is this meteor shower.
Is this a regularly scheduled meteor shower? Sounds like a silly question, but we do have regularly scheduled meteor showers. Is it a larger event?
I don't know if it's a regularly scheduled cyclical meteor shower, but this one is where meteors actually not only enter Earth's atmosphere, but come all the way down to the ground in an unprecedented fashion. And I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking raining down, you know, on the ground, which is unprecedented.
There's been a lot of hype on the Internet lately from the Aussie bloke and others claiming this is already happening and it's being somehow shut up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Bob in Houston, Texas.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I was wondering if there were any enemy of our enemies today using this technology or, you know, remote viewing. And also I was curious about the occult strain of this or the Luciferian type use of this.
Well, two questions, really, I think. Are any foreign governments, our enemies specifically, using this?
The People's Republic of China is moving along by leaps and bounds, including in our sister science, the not remote influencing, but telekinesis. So that's one of the reasons the Matrix Intelligence Agency was created, was to counter that. And I speak that language fluently, Mandarin. And I know
you
culture.
Do. I know you do. You speak Chinese. How do you come to speak Chinese fluently?
Oh, many, many years in my spy days, one of the ways I spied against Russia was through the back door. So I went through, you know, used China to spy on the Russians because they were looking the other way.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mama didn't raise no fool.
Did Mama raise somebody who's toyed around? You did, after all, remote view the concept of Lucifer.
Satan, actually.
Satan, sorry. But, all right, so he asked about Luciferian connections between remote viewing. And it is interesting that you would have remote viewed Satan, is it not? I mean,
There's no connections. It's a powerful mind tool. Remote viewing is a powerful trained mind tool, and you can turn it on. You can turn that spotlight in any direction that you want, good or bad, dark or light. And you remember the day that I decided to take a look around vis-a-vis the Satan issue because of Columbine. I wanted to know why.
I remember.
There is no precedent for children killing children. What is going on? Is it just the population density, or is it something, television or something else? And I wanted to see if there was a supernatural, metaphysical, not necessarily transcendental, force or influence that was coming from the outside in, that was invisible, that would have influenced two children to kill their peers. That's the only reason I looked at the concept of Satan. And when I did, I discovered using these techniques and methods, as far as I was concerned, that I was looking not just at an idea in men's minds, but a physical entity.
Oh, yeah.
And I also realized that I should have ran like hell, because this thing knew that I was looking at it, even though I was looking through time.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's the one entity you would not want to have notice you in any way whatsoever, either on this plane or certainly not its plane. Yikes. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes, hello, Art. Hi.
Hi,
Ed. This is William from Portland.
Hey, William.
Hi. I have two questions, if time will allow, please.
We'll see.
The first one is, a few years back, you spoke of a canister coming from space that would bring a fungus to Earth that would destroy most of our crops. Ed, do you remember that?
In Africa, over Africa.
I was wondering.
Over Africa.
The Wild 2 comet that's being explored by the Stardust probe is sending a canister back, I think, in 2006. Is there a chance that this could be the event you pretended?
We were specifically looking. Yes, there is a chance, because we were. I had two students who were remote viewing the Hale-Bopp comet, and they actually sketched a canister connected to that comet there. So I associated the comet and the canister, thinking that it was the Hale-Bopp comet. So we double-checked our work, and it did indeed look like it was coming in about the same time as the Hale-Bopp comet. But yeah, it was pretty loose, and it was done fast. The canister's real, unfortunately. For me, this is one of the things I would have never talked about publicly, because it vitiates and damages the other data. It's so wild an idea. And yet, I have to stand by it. There's a canister that either has or is coming. It looks like it already has disintegrated in the atmosphere over Africa.
Oh, wow. She disappeared a few weeks back in Corvallis. She was grabbed from her apartment.
Okay, out of the circumstances, caller.
She disappeared a few weeks back in Corvallis. She was grabbed from her apartment.
Okay, out of the circumstances, caller, since it's a case going on right now, I'm going to eliminate the name from the air.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a crime that's occurred in Oregon to a young lady.
How old is the young lady, Art?
19.
Yeah, I limit my searches to children.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's just one of those things. Is she on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children?
Yeah, it's a national case, and the police are totally stumped. She was picked up.
But is she present as enlisted on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children site?
I doubt it being adult. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm really sorry about that.
I understand.
It's just because I'll tell you why. Adults can make choices, and even if they've been abducted against their will, it's worse when you abduct someone who is innocent and has never had a chance to make a choice, has never had a chance to be kissed, has never had a chance to do anything, because their parents have told them what to do. That's innocence.
Your resources are very limited too, I know.
Really limited, and our work. It took us 2 months just to find the location of this child that we just wanted to ground with.
Now, know? What kind of alternative is it for someone like that, Ed, to himself try to acquire the skill of remote viewing? Or is a project of that magnitude, finding somebody like that, should only be put in the hands of an entire team of remote viewers so that you go to 100% assurance, which you tell me a team can achieve, right?
Right. It takes, for something like that, you need a team of viewers that has been trained in the classroom about 120 hours plus a year of experience. Somebody like that can do the project themselves. As a team, they can do it very much. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, so it goes very fast. If they learn it through my DVD series, learnrv.com, for instance, it still is not enough for them. The search problem is our most difficult problem. It is the most difficult. And even working together after learnrv.com, the DVDs, the four set DVD, it's still difficult without the experience in the field.
Well, how are you doing this anyway? I mean, you find an individual, and then you what? Attempt to describe that individual's surroundings, identifiable things.
First we would determine whether or not the individual is dead or alive.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, dead or alive, we look to see where in the world we're at. Are we in, if it's a female, in most cases it is, are we in some Middle Eastern country, African country, and they're a sex slave, or are we in the Pacific Northwest? So we have to establish where in the world we're at, and then what region we're at, and then what area we're at, and then where the site is. That's 50% of our work right there.
And that is done how? By looking at adjacent objects and recognizable things? I mean, I know...
Correct. We're looking at the most significant features. So, for instance, we found the child that we just worked on, that location, by looking at the region's most significant feature, which turned out to be the Seattle Space Needle. Then we had to go down and look at the most recognizable feature within, say, 50 miles of the site. And that turned out to be the Snake River. Then we go down even further, microscopically, mm-hmm. and look to see what's right next to the remains of the child.
Right.
On and on and on. We actually had 17 points, 17 different targets.
And this is hours and hours of man hours, and I guess woman hours.
Yeah, we have one woman on my primary team, Dawn Stoltz from Virginia Beach. So, It's hundreds and hundreds of hours, yes. And that's why we can't respond effectively to an Amber Alert. We can't get there in time.
Huh. Well, thank goodness for Amber Alert. It was a good idea.
I couldn't agree more.
To tag
God.
On. And all radio stations are now by law part of it, Ed. So
I'm perfectly aware of that, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, listen, one more time for the DVDs, for information, I suppose, and your phone number again, to order the DVDs.
To order the Kill Shot DVD or Learn RV DVD, that number is toll-free 866-607-8439.
Okay, one more time, real quick.
866-607-8439.
All right. Listen, my friend, that's it. We're out of time. We've done it again. Thanks a million. As always, look for you next time, Ed, and thank you so very much.
Aloha, Art.
Aloha, indeed. That's it. Right back to the cave now. We sort of joke about that. He's got a cave. He really does have a cave, so he's a man who believes what he says. From the high desert in the middle of the night, that's it for tonight. See you tomorrow night. Till then, ciao.